Welcome to the Capital Connection, a weekly conversation on New York State government and politics. Your host is Dr. Alan Chartok, political scientist and professor emeritus at the University at Albany. Distribution for the Capital Connection is made possible with the help of New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm Alan Chartok. Joining us this week is probably the brightest guy in Albany, Blair Horner, the executive director of the New York Public Interest Research Group, or NYPIRG. Welcome back, Blair. We keep inviting you because you are so important to this whole process. Thanks for being here.
Well, thank you. That's a great way to be introduced. I think I'm gonna have to make sure I record this so I can listen to it every morning when I wake up.
Sure.
It would be a great way to start off the day.
And send a copy to all your relatives while you're at it. Blair, I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the Constitutional Convention. I know that you gave a press conference and that you are in favor of it.
I've had some real reservations.
Go ahead.
Well, we have not taken a position. 20 years ago, we didn't take a position in support of it. We haven't taken a position in support this time. The news conference this week was about, in the budget this year, the governor's put aside $1 million to create a commission to look at the issues, if there was to be a convention, sort of the startup issues that would have to be addressed so that if the voters voted for it in November of 2017, the delegates then would have sort of a running head start to figure out how to deal with all of the various issues in terms of policy, in terms of the logistics, the mechanics. And so our news conference this week was to urge lawmakers to support that, and then in addition, to do things to sort of open up the delegate selection process so that if voters voted for it, there would be a chance that non-pals would get a chance to run and win for the delegates.
Well, as you know, that has been the basis of my objection.
That's right. Well, we're just trying to react to your needs.
I hope that, because as far as I can tell, the entire establishment, be it the pals in the legislature or the governor or, frankly, people like Dick Daty of the Citizens Union and others, have disappointed me, because I think it's easy to say, okay, we're going to have this thing, we're going to fix it, but in the end, it's going to be the same old people making the rules. That's what I'm worried about.
And it's a legitimate concern. That's the reason why in 1957, 1977, and 1997, voters voted it down overwhelmingly, because there are things in the Constitution that the public likes, and there's no way really to control what delegates, if they were elected to the convention, what it is that they would ultimately do. And so I think some people have been concerned every time for the last 60, going on 80 years.
And what are some of those issues?
Well, it sort of depends on your perspective on issues, but there are many people that care about the Forever Wild provision for the Adirondacks and the Catskill Parks. There's constitutional protections for a sound basic education that is the cornerstone for funding for K-12 education in New York. There's a requirement on a 40-hour work week in terms of full-time employment. There's language in there about trial by jury, about pension protections. There's a number of things that were written basically in the 30s into the state constitution, which are viewed as, by many, as things that should be treasured, not put at risk.
Yeah. Do you think that there's any legitimate reason to think, Blair Horner, that the Constitutional Convention might really do something about ethics?
Well, I think the short answer is yes. Of course, it depends on which delegates get elected to the convention. But if there is going to be a rationale for a yes vote in November 2017, it's going to be that Albany's broken. It's been, suffering from an seemingly unending political crime wave. And the only way to deal with that are to institute changes in the state constitution that would make it better. And so I think that will be the rationale. Different people will have different proposals. Things like term limits will be advanced. People advance systems on maybe voluntary public financing of elections, independent ethics enforcement, restrictions on outside income. All of those issues can be advanced, but you can't in advance know what the delegates are actually going to do when they get there.
And if it's my way of thinking, and what happens is that these people are going to get elected because they have a cousin Louis who's a state legislator, and it's going to be a loaded convention, which I truly believe, And then why in the world would they change any of the current ethics loopholes that allows them to slither as creatures in the night?
You know, you always pick on Louie, by the way. I've noticed this. Yeah. Every time it's always Cousin Louie. It's not Cousin Sally or something.
No.
Maybe
that's because it's my twin brother's name.
You know, the convention, I mean, when you think about it, this is, I assume, the logic of the opposition, is who can run to be delegate, right? You have to take time off from your job. You'd have to go to convention. You'd have to run for office. You'd have to get petition signed. You'd have to get elected. You'd have to raise campaign contributions probably to run to be a delegate.
Exactly.
And so who would be those people, right? They would be the Louis, the Cousin Louis of the world, that are plugged into the existing political establishment that would be able to run and win. And that is the critique as to why it's never happened. The only convention that's happened in modern times was in the mid-1960s, and the legislature called it in reaction to various U.S. Supreme Court decisions that they tried to fix the state constitution. And the people that controlled the convention in 67 were people that were part of the political establishment.
Exactly. And because I'm so old, I remember it as if it were yesterday. I do. And it was a disgrace. However, let's move on to some really important things. I want to talk to you about Andrew Cuomo. It is my understanding that from insiders that he's going to run for governor for a third term and that he's collecting a massive war chest in order to do that. You think he's going to have any problems? Oh, by the way, my informants are telling me that he's not worried about the Republican he'll have to face. He's worried about the potential for a Democratic primary from the left.
Well, you know, not being a partisan politico, of course, this is sort of just observations from 20,000 feet. But, you know, as we all know, and it's an old saw, you know, 2 years in politics is more than a lifetime. It's sort of like an epoch or something like that in terms of how much time there is between now and then. A lot of things can happen. But let's assume for the moment that the governor is truly considering a run, and that's the smart play, right? You want to leave, if you're a successful politician, you want to have as many options as you can, and third term is one of them. Pataki made it. His father made it. There's certainly a history.
Not Pataki's father, Cuomo's father.
Right. That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. And
yeah.
Although, by the way, the third term turns out to be typically a legacy killer, not bolsterer. Even Mayor Bloomberg's third term was sort of ended on a whimper, not a bang. So let's assume, but he was going to run. I mean, I think there is a concern about his left flank. He's always had it. He had it the last time. And I think to some extent his tacking back to the left a little bit in terms of his policy positions have been a way to sort of prepare for that. I don't know if he does or does not have to worry about the Republicans. I think that's going to matter more about what's happening in the country in terms of, you know, the year 2018. Mm-hmm. It's a long way out. There could be some self-financed Bloomberg-type figure that emerges on the New York State political scene that could challenge the governor. If there's something the governor does that doesn't work out. So I wouldn't write off the Republicans. Your informants, I think, are
mistaken.
Well, not necessarily mistaken. They may turn out to be true, but I think it's sort of at the moment in the dream category, necessarily then based on fact. It's too long to go between now and 2018. But the governor, I think, has to be concerned about the left of his party. I mean, you see it at the national level with Bernie Sanders. You saw it in the primary with Zephyr Teachout.
Who came very close to beating him.
She ran very well, captured a third of the vote.
With no money.
With no money. And, you know, she hadn't really run for anything. I mean, she just emerged out of nowhere and became sort of the default setting for people on the left that were unhappy with the governor's primarily his fiscal policy. So I think he still has to worry about it.
And she had a name that nobody could ever possibly
It's a great name. You can thank her parents.
Zephyr Teachout, right.
Right.
Right. So, but he really has no other place to go. I mean, that's the point. You know, there are still people out there who are mouthing that he's going to run for president, that Hillary will get indicted, somehow he'll get the nod.
Drafted somehow. You know,
ahead
of Biden, he'll get drafted.
Right, and that ain't going to happen. Although, you know, Biden has been very kind to Andrew Cuomo, put his arm around him a couple of times and said, best governor in the United States. And one thinks that Biden, by default, had to take over the party for some reason or get the presidential nod in a brokered convention, that Andrew might be the vice presidential candidate.
No, I mean, you know, anything's possible in a brokered convention. But, you know, again, I think the governor, our current governor, who knows what he's thinking, but certainly at the moment, let's assume for the moment that, you know, whoever is running in the Democratic primary, nothing happens to them. They run and they get the nomination. And if they win, that clears the field, I think, at the national level. But the governor, you know, a third term, though, it is a tough legacy. The third term, people are getting pretty tired of you in your third term. And if that's the launching pad for a run for president, you know, it's a tough platform to run from.
On the other hand, this governor does have one residue of one group that is, you know, obviously in his pocket, and that's New York City and Long Island. They like him out there. Now, I don't know that they know a lot about state government in those places, but they do seem to like him, and that seems to be, you know, his fortification.
Yeah, well, two-thirds of the population's down there, right? So, I mean, if you can do well in New York City and in suburbs of New York City, you're in pretty good shape statewide.
Yeah.
I think, though, again, if there is any sort of revolt on the left for the governor, it would come out of New York City. And I think there's some decisions he's made, for example, in this year's budget, which are a little tricky. He has proposed a big cut to the city university system, which is really the economic ladder for minorities and new immigrants. I mean, a city university is almost, to the decimal point, a reflection of the population as a whole. And that doesn't necessarily play well. He's pledged billions of dollars for the mass transit systems in New York City, but his budget doesn't really have any new money for that. And so how some of those big issues that affect people's lives could either work to his favor or disfavor, depending on how it plays out.
Don't you think there are some people who say about this governor that he says one thing that's attractive but then doesn't do it, or he may in fact do the opposite?
Well, you know, I mean, if true, that wouldn't make him unique, certainly, right? I mean, we are talking about American politics. Well, you know, and yet, you know, he did get marriage equality, right? I mean, and he did pass gun control measures, and he has passed a property tax cap. I mean, so some of the things that he said he was going to do, he did do.
But, for example, he said when he came into office that he was not going to let them draw their own districts, and then he let them do it.
Yes, he did. That is certainly true.
And they were probably the most
partisan gerrymandered districts in New York State history.
Blair Horner, you obviously have been working with NYPERG on watershed protection. Now, you know, you've been struggling in the vineyards for a long time, but now the chickens have come home to roost.
Which part of the watersheds are we talking about here?
I'm talking about the part of the watershed where the chickens are. No, I'm talking about places where drinking water.
No, like is, in Hoosick Falls.
Yeah, Hoosick Falls and other places.
When you think about it, the water quality issue is obviously a very big issue in New York, and the governor's trying to get ahead of it on Long Island. He created a task force recently to look at it, and there were some articles in Newsday actually this week about drinking water contamination issues on Long Island. The Hoosick Falls issue is an area where it's increasingly being clear that there were warning bells going off before the administration acted on it. There have been lead levels now detected in the drinking water in western New York that exceeds Flint. There were schools closed in Binghamton because of lead levels in the drinking water there. And a lot of this stuff is a combination of toxic contamination issues, which are just dumb environmental policies of the past that we're paying for now. And part of it is crumbling urban infrastructure. And you have corroding pipes. So the issue out in Buffalo, as I understand it, is due to the salt use on the roads to keep the roads clear, that has leached its way into the drinking water, which has gotten into the pipes, the old lead pipes put in probably 100 and some odd years ago, has eroded them and corroded them, similar to what happened in Flint. And the lead levels have gone up in the drinking water as a result from those pipes. And this is all about crumbling infrastructure at a certain level, on that level. So there's two different issues. One is are sort of the toxics, bad environmental policies. What are you going to do about that? And then there's the crumbling urban infrastructure in these older upstate cities, even downstate for that matter, where you have aging infrastructure, which is crumbling after decades and decades of people just ignoring them.
We're talking about around the Civil War in some cases.
That's right. And they haven't been dealt with because the political constituencies in urban areas do not have the same political clout in New York and much of the rest of the country as suburban areas. And so that's where the money goes. And so as these cities crumble, you sinkholes in roads. We saw it in the city of Troy in the past month. You have all these kinds of problems. It's also having an impact on the drinking water quality. And, you know, really the state, the country for that matter, but certainly the state, has to deal with this issue as a top issue because real people get affected. I mean, you have lead poisoning as a child. You have a serious drag on the rest of your life, and society is going to have to deal with it.
No question about it. So my next question to you is, we've got a whole bunch of primaries coming up.
Yeah.
Now, I live in Massachusetts, a fairly good state, where, You know, you can take a ballot in either the Republican or Democratic primary. You can cause trouble if you want to. And whereas we think there's a pretty good chance there's going to be a very close election. But in New York State, tell us about the primary, what we can expect here between Bernie Sanders and the always popular Hillary Clinton.
Well, I think, you know, it's interesting. There's two different issues really happening on April 19th. One is going to be the presidential primaries, both Democrat and Republican. And, you know, it's early March. It's hard to know exactly what the status is going to be of those races by the middle of April.
Yeah. So there's remember, that it's 4 days after income taxes.
And people will be sad.
Yeah.
But also there's going to be a handful of special elections happening on the exact same day. And so for those areas, there's a special election, for example, for former Senate Majority Leader Dane Skelos, who got the heave-ho because of a corruption conviction. Former Speaker of the Assembly, Sheldon Silver's district, they're going to have a special election, and a number of others. In those districts, I don't even know how they're going to do it mechanically, because the primaries in New York, unlike Massachusetts, you can only vote for the party that you're in. So the third of New Yorkers that are not
That's
enrolled
very
in the
interesting,
party
yeah.
are out of it.
Yeah. But,
and yet they will be allowed to vote in the general election in those special elections. So I don't know how they're going to do it. Maybe separate machines
Two
or
lines.
Something. Yeah, and if you're in a primary, do you go from one line to the next?
Yeah.
Do you start at one and then go to the back of the other? So there's a certain amount of confusion, I think, that's going to occur in those areas.
Do you think that helps the Democrats or the Republicans that there are these special elections?
Well, it, of course, depends on the district. Most of these special elections that are going to occur in New York on April 19th are in Democratic districts, and so it's going to be just whoever the party picks is going to win. The state Senate race, the seat to replace Skelos, that right now it's technically 31 Republicans and 31 Democrats. That seat makes the numerical majority. In that case, the Democrats have a huge enrollment advantage in that district, about a 20,000 vote enrollment advantage. But people who show up at the election may be people who are showing up because of the primary, right? So if the Republican primary is more contested than the Democratic one on April 19th, for example, maybe more Republicans show up. So ironically, the U.S. presidential primary may have less of an impact in New York than people think, but more of an impact on state politics than people think, because it may impact who the state senator is from Senate District 9, which would be the numerical tiebreaker.
Okay. So every once in a while, we now start talking about reforming our criminal justice system. And we know that there's a huge push to be a little bit kinder to the people who are in New York State prisons, including the fact that a lot of politicians are saying we have many too many people in prison. And one of the things that keeps rearing its head every once in a while is whether we should provide college educations for prisoners. And you say?
Yes. It's not the education, of course, it's the financial aid, right? I mean, most prisoners are poor. Most people that are incarcerated are poor, and so they don't have the money for an online, you know, Empire State College program, or the prisons don't offer them. And the reason is it's not so much, I think, you know, bleeding heart liberalism on this. I think it actually is hard-headed fiscal conservatism. If you think about it, there's a very high recidivism rate for people who go to prison, get out, and then go back again. It's very high. But not surprisingly, it's a lot lower if they end up with a college degree. People with college degrees are far less likely to end up in prison than people that don't have one. And so from a societal point of view, it's a relatively low-cost investment to reduce future crime and to improve safety in our communities. Now, the counter argument is, well, if you're going to make it easier for people in prison to get financial aid, well, what about my kid or my spouse?
And you heard it a lot the last time we had this.
And so, you know, I don't think one says no to the other, right? I think it's like, you know, so it's in society's interest to have more well-educated individuals. College is one way to do that. Why shouldn't the state invest in both? So I think that providing financial aid, college financial aid, to those in prison who want to get a college education is an investment in the long-term stability of society and therefore is worth the money.
Let me go back to Andrew Cuomo for a moment. How come his polling numbers have not gone up?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think The governor
moved to the left, right? He's moved to the left. He's taking $15 an hour around the state, riding around in a bus, saying that. But, you know, what is it?
Well, I you know, it's, again, I'm not a partisan politico, so I don't necessarily know all the polling data and what they're thinking inside of their heads. But, I mean, of course, what we don't know is where would his numbers be had he not taken those positions.
Sure.
Right? And so there's that. And then on top of it, I mean, to some extent, the public has already sort of made up their mind on him. I mean, he's been governor now for a long time.
He did close down the Moreland Commission.
Some things
he did attack the teachers in a way.
Right. And the teachers attacked back. And at the grassroots level, you know, that shows up in your polling data when people are hammering away and your image gets tarnished by those battles. And there's almost no other way for it to happen. And particularly if you're taking on well-financed institutions such as the teachers union, you're going to get tarnished reputation as a result.
But don't you think the teachers union is likely to endorse Andrew for a third term, even though a Cuomo fan said to me recently, and somebody who knows the situation pretty well, he won't get a single teacher's vote in New York State.
Well, I don't know if he'll get the union endorsement. I don't think he did in the first two runs. So
yeah, but maybe
they sat on their hands, I think, both times.
Right, maybe they'd work something out.
This is when we were talking earlier about the third term. This is really what you're talking about, right? At some point, I mean, Mario once had this great quote where he said, "In politics, friends are fleeting and enemies accumulate." Well, that's exactly true, right? And so, the longer you're in office, the more people think of the things that you did that they don't like, and less about the things that they do that you did that they do like. And there's sort of, you know, incumbent fatigue that sort of sets in. So, you know, again, I don't know what that could be. I'm sure that's to some extent a factor. And we don't know what his polling numbers would have been had he not taken these positions. Yeah. They might have been better. They might have been worse. But we don't know.
Yeah. You know, that's very interesting that you said that about Mario. And because I once asked him, I said, a lot of people owe you their offices. You've appointed all these judges. You've done all of that. And he said to me, yeah, so what you end up with is 12,000 people who hate you because you didn't pick them, and one ingrate.
That's right.
I bet that was marvelous.
That was very insightful.
Okay, so are people in New York State likely, and we only have a minute to do this, likely to get out and vote and be concerned with the political process? Or are they in the stage now where they're saying a plague on all your houses?
Well, certainly, if you look at the long-term polling data in New York, it's the latter, right? I mean, people are sort of turned off. I think Americans are turned off. It's hard not to be by the nauseating spectacle of American politics. It's hard not to be turned off. Yet, you know, I mean, as I tell anyone who will listen, all these decisions are going to get made whether you participate or not. Wouldn't you rather have a say in the decisions of your life in terms of taxation, the environment, public health, schools, et cetera?
They're all a bunch of crooks.
Yeah, well, if you say that, then the crooks will be making those decisions and you will have nothing to do with it.
We never had anything to do with it. It's,
you know,
still a bunch of crooks.
Then you will be, you know, as Preparara mentioned, you know, in a nation of sheep, you know, you end up being governed by wolves.
That's right. And do you want to be a lamb chop or not?
That's right. I'd rather be an attack sheep.
Blair Horner, we love having you here. We're out of time. Our guest has been Blair Horner, the executive director of New York Public Interest Research Group. Congratulations, Blair, for all your work and for your ascendancy within your own organization. It means every once in a while something right happens. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Capital Connection is distributed with the cooperation of the public radio stations of New York State. David Gustina is the producer of The Capital Connection, a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany. Support for The Capital Connection comes from New York State United Teachers, representing professionals in education and healthcare, online at nysut.org.